The Fan on Demand. The truth hurts, especially when he hits you over the head with it. This is the Jeff Blair Show. Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
All right, don't forget Baseball Central at 11 o'clock today. Yours truly and Kevin Barker. Pete Walker, the pitching coach of the Toronto Blue Jays, will join us. Pete will have an answer to what the hell happened to the bullpen and why the Jays pitchers are walking everybody. We'll deal with that with Kevin Barker. Also have a discussion about that whole incident with Carlos Gomez and Travis Snyder and Garrett Cole in the Pittsburgh-Milwaukee game yesterday, which is ludicrous. Anyhow, we'll talk to Kevin about that. Going to give away... we're not going to give away the tickets. Someone else will do that. They don't trust us with that. But we are going to take qualifiers for Raptors tickets for tomorrow night's game. So here's what you're going to do. You're going to tweet hashtag... I wanted to use the hashtag fixes in honor of NBA officials, but we won't do that. You're going to tweet hashtag Blair Show Raps. That's R-A-P-S. Again, hashtag Blair Show Raps, and we'll pick a qualifier. It's pretty, the hottest tickets in town right now, I got to think. So again, we've got a couple of Raptors tickets to give away. We're taking qualifiers for it. We'll pick one qualifier from this show. Use the hashtag Blair Show Raps. And we'll see if we can hook you up. Or at least put you in a position to be hooked up by somebody else. Who's giving away the tickets? Do we know? Anyhow. Again, hashtag Blair Show Raps. Glenn Healy cannot do that because as a paid employee of this... of this station, you are not allowed to get involved in those things. But you're in Montreal anyhow, so you don't care. Mr. Healy, how you doing?
Playoffs.
Playoffs?
We're talking playoffs?
Did you know that people are under the impression that there's some sort of civic bylaw in Toronto preventing playoffs from happening? That is not the case.
No.
Anyhow.
Not the case. But boy, they're exciting here in Montreal.
You know, I'll tell you what. I mean, I've been there for the... for playoffs, and we all know the great job the Canadiens do with the whole pregame thing. But I got to ask you, Glenn, up 3-0 to Tampa Bay, and look, we know Tampa Bay's got a lot of young players, and you know they don't have Ben Bishop. And I mean, you said in this show, I think you said very clearly, no Ben Bishop, no playoff win for Tampa. But is Montreal this good right now?
No, there's a combination of things that are happening. And the first is, and there's a lot of luck, right? You play game one, Carey Price is lousy, and you win. And the Ben Bishop word's used, because if game one with Ben Bishop happens, then there's no chance Montreal wins. Mm-hmm. Tampa Bay wins that game. Game two happens, yeah, they were a real good team. And then game three... you know, the presentation before the game was spectacular. It's hard to grasp it on TV, you know, when you're watching it, and we did cover it. We don't cover very many presentations. I know the Leafs most Saturdays honor pretty much everything, mm-hmm. but that presentation was worth covering. And the energy in the building was extraordinary. And 11 seconds into the game, they're up 1-0. You can't paint a better script. That being said, you know, they're a team that when you look at Anaheim, when you look at L.A., even though they got smoked last night, you know, those teams in the West are better teams. They are. It's a much different game. But in this first round, in this series, they're a complete team.
Glenn, what shift. I want to shift focus to the West because I find it's odd. I watched that Chicago St. Louis series, and I mean, I would never call a triple overtime game boring, but there's something about that series. It's not. It hasn't been fun to watch, and I'm kind of disappointed by that.
Well, game two, the next game was because you know just absolute forget the rule book and do whatever I want. It was the Wild Wild West, you know, and Chicago really should be up in that series. They should be up 2-0. You know, there's no question that you know kind of late in the game the way they've kind of just fallen apart. It just hasn't worked for them, and you know, especially game two. I mean, just absolute no respect for the rule book and for the team. They were shorthanded for like 9 of the last 10 minutes. So they got what they deserved. That's why they're down. But, you know, it'll heat up. It's clear, though. Both teams absolutely hate each other.
Yeah, that is true. There's not much doubt about that. There's a lot of hate in that whole conference, as a matter of fact. But if you're and look, the Blackhawks have... You know, the Blackhawks are no strangers to having to come back from being down, but there's a feel to this series that even if Brent Seabrook was there, it just seems as you said, I don't know if the Blackhawks don't have respect for the Blues, but they're not as focused as we've seen Blackhawks teams in the past. And that includes Jonathan Toews, which I find kind of surprising, to be honest.
No, they're very arrogant. That's
yes,
what they said on the
that's a great word.
The other day, they're an arrogant group that doesn't have any respect for the fact that if they take a penalty, that could affect the cause of the group and the Seabrook penalty. I mean, there was no need to hit Backes when Seabrook hit Backes. He didn't have the puck, so there's a pretty good start. It was late, the second. You left your feet. It was charging. It was interference. And you've cost your team now for 3 games. They're going to have to play with Sheldon Brookbank. That's a pretty good reason not to do what you did.
You know, and people sort of look at the Blackhawks and go, well, Duncan Keith is still the guy. But, I mean, boy, Brent Seabrook is right there with him when it comes to special teams ice time. In some playoff games, he's been as reliable as Keith. And there's a huge fall off. I don't know. I guess if you're... Glenn, I guess if you're Joel Quenneville, I mean, how do you handle this? Do you sort of throw your defense pairs into the mix master and come up with new pairings, or how do you go about doing this?
You really want me to answer that because
yeah.
You just got fined $25,000? Really? he's out of control too.
Right.
So sometimes you take on the personality of your coach, and wow, has the team not taken on the personality of their coach. Yeah.
Glenn Healy of
Reach
hockey.
Down.
Yep.
Grab a pair.
Yep.
And hope that you have a chance in the series. I don't think they do.
No, I'm with you. I think, again, I said that we know Chicago's come back from deficits before, but this doesn't have the feel. And quite frankly, Glenn, I don't think that L.A.-San Jose series does either. What has San Jose done to L.A.? Or let me rephrase that. Is that series where it is because of what San Jose has done or because of what L.A. hasn't done? Starting with stop the puck.
When the announcers in a game say, touchdown San Jose, you pretty much win the game. I haven't seen a playoff game in a long time where you got to get 9 to win. It has been a long time. They're just a good team. They are, and they've, you know, kind of pushed themselves on L.A. and just, you know, have just imposed their will. It, you know, last night when you go up 2-0 and you think, wow, we're having a pretty good game. Sometimes you're not really having a pretty good game. It's just that the other team, it's dumb luck, it's bad goaltending, it's penalties at the wrong time. But the team that really is playing better shows why they should win the game. And I've seen that many, many times, that early leads, going up, you know, early, thinking that, well, we're the cool guys. We're it. We're going to win. No, we're a better team, and we're going to show you why. And that's exactly what San Jose did.
As much as we talked about how there's kind of an arrogance about this Blackhawks team, there's a little difference there. San Jose seems to be a lot different as well. For one thing, there seems to be a composure there. Now, look, I know a big lead goes a long ways towards giving you composure, but San Jose really, they just appear to me, Glenn, just from what you see on TV, as if they're just sort of very comfortable where they are. They're very composed. I don't get the sense that this is a team with the weight of the postseasons passed on its shoulder. This is kind of the San Jose team we sort of expected to see, I think, in the last 4 or 5 years, isn't it?
Yeah, arrogance lacks respect.
Yeah.
Swagger has respect, but has confidence, and that's what they've got. They're a team that, at one point, you always talked about Marlowe and Big Joe, and now I don't talk about Big Joe. I talk about Little Joe Pavelski.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I talk about Logan Couture. They've almost passed the torch, and that torch has led to depth.
It's funny, too. Daryl Sutter's post-game news conference yesterday was just remarkable. I mean, he was asked about the Sharks, and he just kind of said, well, they finished ahead of us, and then he kind of shrugged and looked around and waited for somebody else to ask a question. You really do get the sense that the Kings really, they don't have an answer for this, do they? They really don't.
No, they don't. No, and Sutter knows it, and the group knows it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's always a point in a series when the will to win for the other team is taken away, and as you watch these series unfold, you start to sense it. And Tampa Bay, you sense it.
Mm-hmm.
You know that they know we're done. We're not winning this series, and if Stamkos doesn't play the next game, we're not. And L.A. senses it. They know. We're just not good enough. I watched it in the Olympics where teams would, you know, push back to a certain point and then they would realize we're not good enough.
Yep.
We're just not going to win. And, you know, in the Olympics, it was teams that had, not a full roster of NHL players because they'll never quit, but, you know, say 7 or 8 players that had been down that road, had played the NHL and looked at each other and went, could you tell the other 11 guys we're not winning? Because we're not. That's just the way it is.
Glenn Healy joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. The Columbus-Pittsburgh series gets resumes tonight. And I don't think Columbus has that feeling, do they? I don't think Columbus has a sense that they're not going to win this series.
One sec. Yeah, get my equipment ready. Yes. Marc-Andre Fleury again. The Stars have not played good for Pittsburgh. They have not.
Right.
But Marc-Andre Fleury, it is just, you can just smell it. You're just not safe.
Mm-hmm.
You're not, there's times during the game when the puck's in the corner and he's looking somewhere else and you kind of wonder to yourself, wow, what happened on the way to the Forum? Because, it's tragic to watch. But if I'm Columbus, absolutely. This is your series to win.
Glenn, it was good of you to do this. Thanks so much.
Absolutely, Jeff.
Keep your equipment ready. Keep your equipment ready, my friend. The Pittsburgh Penguins may be calling.
The dream dies.
Take care. That is Glenn Healy of Hockey Night in Canada. Soon to be Glenn Healy of the Pittsburgh Penguins. So, again, just to reiterate, we are giving away, or our station's giving away Raptors tickets, hottest tickets in town. I mean, they're smoking hot. They're so hot we can't even hold them in our hands. We're taking a qualifier. We're going to pick somebody who reaches out to us on Twitter, uses the hashtag BlairShowRaps, and you will qualify for some tickets to see the Raptors and Nets tomorrow night, and as I said, even if you're not a basketball fan, you got to jump on board this. I mean, seriously, you got to jump on board this. So we'll continue to take your tweets using that hashtag for a while longer. A couple of breaking news items, by the way. One of which I feel like getting the Tim and Sid horns out for. The Guardian is reporting that David Moyes has been fired by Manchester United, which I feel like just running around the street right now celebrating. And there we go. and Mike Woodson, the head coach of the New York Knicks. Gone! And his whole staff, including former Raptors coach Daryl Walker. They gone! So there you go, David Moyes, fired by Manchester United, according to The Guardian, and Mike Woodson and the rest of his Knicks staff fired by Phil Jackson. So now the lineup begins for that job, for the Knicks job, perhaps anyhow. Your Toronto Blue Jays have the day off after a 5-4 road trip that I think should have been 7-2, 6-3. A couple of bullpen meltdowns will be the dominant storyline coming out of this road trip. And just to reiterate, the Blue Jays have issued 4.33 walks per nine innings. That's the second most in Major League Baseball. The White Sox have issued 4.76. Relievers are third with 5.43 walks per innings pitched. And starting pitchers, that's third and the third most in Major League Baseball. The starters have issued 3.65 walks per nine innings. That's fourth most in Major League Baseball. That, folks, is not very good. Buck Martinez is the play-by-play voice of the Blue Jays on Sportsnet. He joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. And in 90 seconds, Buck Martinez is going to tell us what the hell's wrong with the Blue Jays pitching. Go ahead, Buck.
You absolutely hit it on the head. It's too many walks, and you don't have to be a baseball expert to figure that out. But you know what? From year to year, Jeff, the bullpens are fluid, and I don't care who you are. You just never know what you're going to get the first 25, 30 games or so till everybody sorts things out. And, you know, for Aaron Loop to walk three guys, that's unheard of. We've never seen him do that. And, of course, the 8-walk inning the other day in Minnesota, you're right. It should have been a 7-2 road trip. And that's how well the club is playing overall. And they're still not hitting, and they're still not pitching. But because they're playing such good defense, they're in every game. And thank goodness for Mark Burley, eh?
Well, thank goodness, especially considering what has happened in the past early in the season with Mark Burley, not just here, but through his career. He's if it wasn't for him, you know, we'd be asking some hard questions about the Jays, because, I mean, frankly, the starters, they're giving John Gibbons about as many innings as he got last year per start when it wasn't very good.
Yeah, and that's the problem. And you can't continue to do that, you know. And Morrow has to figure out a way to have quicker innings, more efficient innings, and the same for Dustin McGowan. And R.A. Dickey's got to start pitching like an ace and pitch much better. And, you know, that's the story. When you have your starters go less than five innings two or three times during your rotation, that's going to kill you. And we have already seen the impact on the bullpen. And, you know, John has done a terrific job using this bullpen. The way he has spaced things out, using Esmiel Rogers the other day in that outing, I thought was a stroke of genius, because he had not pitched well.
Mm-hmm.
And he came out, he knew he was motivated because he's pitching against his former team, the Indians. And he came out and threw the best I've ever seen him throw. And, you know, it just really wrapped up that game and set up the bullpen very effectively for Sunday. Unfortunately, it just didn't work out.
No, you know, and there are people, obviously, look, in a game where there's a bullpen meltdown, people automatically start looking at the manager. But yeah, I thought John did what most of us would have done in that situation, I think. I didn't have a lot of questions as to how he used the bullpen. And, I mean, Buck, you've been in the manager's chair. At some point, two things happen. At some point, you're going, I got to find somebody who can get me out of this mess. Or at some point you're going, well, I'm just going to let this guy do it. You know,
exactly.
He's out there. You've got to make those are the two aspects that you have to look at as a manager.
Well, and especially the Thursday game two of that doubleheader, it was perfect. He got Cecil to get out of the inning. He brings in Delabar, and he walks the first two, and then they let Nunez bunt with two strikes, and he gets it down. Then Sergio came in and had a complete meltdown. But if you scripted it and said, okay, Cecil will get us out of the seventh, Delabar will pitch the eighth, Santos will pitch the ninth, we're going to win this game. And it just didn't happen. And you're right. 5-4 road trip really kind of stings after what it should have been.
Buck, when I look at the starting rotation, R.A. Dickey's a knuckleball guy. Dustin McGowan's, we know about his health issues. Brandon Morrow, we know about his health issues. Drew Hutchinson coming back. I can understand why Jay's starters would walk guys. Yeah, I mean, I can understand. You don't like it, but I can see where that would happen. But it really surprises me the number of walks we're seeing from the relievers more than anything else. And that kind of concerns me because, as far as I know, none of them are hurt.
No. No, and you're right. It's just one of those things on the road trip. It seemed like every time they needed to make a pitch, they couldn't. And then David Murphy hits the double off of Loop, and, you know, Loop hasn't given up anything, and he's been as reliable as anybody in the last 2 years. But those things happen, and it's magnified when you're in a situation. Hey, look, you know what? The Jays are 10-9. Last year, they were 10-17 in April.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of fight in this team. I've seen it. We've seen it. They bounced back after that doubleheader loss and came back on Cleveland in Friday and Saturday. You know, there's a intensity here. You can see it with Bautista. You know, Edwin's really pressing right now, trying to get things going offensively. But, you know, the return of Reyes is going to boost this team again. And you know, you keep fingers crossed that he stays on the field, but he can make a lot of things happen.
You know, I was going to say, you mentioned Edwin. And we saw this last year with Edwin, a bit of a slow start. But we also know what to look for that suggests he's going to snap out of it. And some of those things are, you know, hard contact that gets caught, but also some good at bats that don't necessarily result in hits. Like my sense is Edwin's about there, and I think he has a pretty good homestand. That's my sense. He's almost there. I saw it that last at bat. You know, there are a couple of pitches he took, and I thought, okay, this is kind of what I saw from Edwin last year.
Yeah, he had a pretty good road trip. He had some great at bats. His bat's coming through the zone quickly again, and he's about ready to go off. I think you're right. I think you know, he's going to have one of these, you know, three or four home run weeks, and everything's going to be fine, and he's going to end up strong in May strong in April and to carry it into May. But offensively, I'm not concerned about this team, even though the numbers suggest there is reason for concern. But you know what? I think there's focus. This is a big week. You got Baltimore and Boston coming in, and they got to make sure that they have everything in order, and they come out and put their best foot forward and win five of these six games.
And, Buck, you know, I look around the American League East, and I know we've talked about this, and Kevin Barker and I are going to talk about it in Baseball Central as well, but another break going the Jays' way, unfortunately, but Ivan Nova looks like he's done for the year. You know, Tampa Bay's getting pitching injuries. The Yankees are getting injuries. The Red Sox are hurt. There's a lot that it's almost just, I know it's early, but it's almost just, you can almost get the sense it's just sitting there. You really do. It's almost like the baseball gods have said, you know what we did to you guys the last 3 years? Well, okay, maybe it's time for, you know, maybe it's time for a little payback here.
Everybody in the division has issues. There's no question about it. And of course, without Casey Jansen right now, that's a real strength of the ball club that's out, just like the other teams you mentioned. But I agree with you 100%. Whoever gets on a roll, whoever gets hot, is going to widen the gap between themselves, because everybody's dealing with issues. And you have to look at the consistency of the starting pitching, and that's the concern for the Blue Jays. If they can get these starters pushed out there in 6 and 7 innings, then everything will fall into place, and then they can string things together. I think there's a guy you should keep your eye on, and that's Marcus Stroman. He's throwing the ball very well.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to Gary Aronson a couple of times last week, and he said he's really starting to come around, making quality pitches. And, you know, mind you, he didn't throw the ball well in the spring. He didn't command his pitches, but now things have settled down. I think he's out of the spotlight and all of the suggestions he was going to make the team, and now he's just taking care of business down in AAA. So I think they've got a couple of options, he and Sean Nolan, and, you know, just there might be some guys down there that can step in if some of these guys don't start to put it together.
Juan Francisco intrigues me.
Yes, he does, doesn't he? He looks like a left-handed Edwin Encarnacion.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly. He, you know, and I'm looking at this guy. You know, he's had, what, 6 years? He's been at the Reds, the Braves, the Brewers. People have, I mean, lots of power, lots of strikeouts. Is he a guy that that can make an impact in this team?
I think so. He's 26 years old.
Mm.
And you know what? He's bounced around. He signed as a 16-year-old with the Reds. And then he went to Atlanta and Milwaukee, and now he's with his fourth team, and all of a sudden it's kind of a wake-up call saying, you know what, I better do something here. And, you know, he fit really well into AAA coming over in April, and then he moved right in and did a good job. He's not swinging the bat right now as well as he was when he first got there. So hopefully he'll get that stroke back. But this guy has absolutely torn up baseball and winter ball in the Dominican Republic, and he's a legitimate hitter. You can see the way he approaches it, that he can hit. You know, he's not going to play much in the field, I don't think, but if he can give you an option until Aramín gets healthy, he's going to have an impact.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, he's a guy in this ballpark. We've talked about it's amazing how hitters come to Toronto to rediscover, to get a second wind, or in this case, maybe a fifth wind. That may happen with Juan Francisco. You know, a lot of people around baseball, when the Jays signed him and put him in AAA, there were a lot of people in baseball saying that's a good signing.
Yeah. Now, he's kind of he's under the radar right now, but he fits in. He's got a lot of good mentors here with Bautista and Encarnacion and Reyes and Melky, and you know, it might be the perfect storm for him to get things together.
Good stuff as always, Buck. We'll see you down at the ballpark tomorrow.
All right, Jeff. You have a great day.
You too. That is Buck Martinez. He is the voice of the Blue Jays on Sportsnet. And again, the Jays have tonight off. Start a 3-game series against the Orioles. Then the Boston Red Sox are in town for 3 games. I wonder if Alex Anthopoulos will stand in the top of the dugout and yell, bleep Boston. I don't think we'll see that happening. But, yeah, Buck's right. It's chance to make a little hay right now if you're the Blue Jays. You're 10-9. You're going to have a better April than you had last year. But, wow, they could be very easily be 12-7 right now. 12-7 will look awfully good. Nonetheless, again, things, as the Jays have been flirting around 500, one thing hasn't happened this year. Nobody's run away with the American League East, which is good. Nobody's really fallen out of the picture. Nobody's run away with it. And everybody has serious health issues. Now, I would argue, we talk about Casey Jansen being in the DL and now Adam Lind being on the DL. But, folks, the Yankees, Rays, Red Sox, they've got deeper health issues than the Jays do. And the Orioles don't have Manny Machado, but he is expected to be back at some point next month. This would be a good time to take it to the Orioles and the Red Sox. We'll have more on that with Kevin Barker, Baseball Central, at 11 o'clock today. Pete Walker, the pitching coach of the Toronto Blue Jays, will join us. And, well, we'll ask him about these walks, these bases, based on balls. And, again, I'm making the point, not totally surprised by what I've seen out of the starting pitchers. Frankly, you look at this rotation, you got a knuckleball guy, expect some wildness. Dustin McGowan, you might anticipate some wildness. I don't know what the hell to make of Brandon Morrow. And Drew Hutchison, a guy coming off TJ surgery. So, yeah, you look at them and you go, yeah, you can see where there would be. And don't even get me started on J-Hap. You look at them and you go, okay, you could see where there would be some problems with control. But I don't know what the hell's happened to the relievers. Now, that may be, and I don't know if that's overuse. If the Jays starters are averaging less than 5 2/3 per start, 5 2/3 innings per start, that's not good. That's as bad almost as it was last year. And I don't know if that's taxing the bullpen. We'll talk to Kevin Barker about that. And as I said, Pete Walker will join us as well in Baseball Central. We are still taking your tweets. We're soliciting your tweets. Use the hashtag Blair Show Wraps. And we'll get Travis McKenzie, my producer, to pull a qualifier out of that list. And you'll have a chance to win some playoff tickets to see the Raps and Nets game 2 of that series tomorrow. On the weekend, a guy whose story, I guess you would say, in some ways, for most of us who aren't boxing fans, his story superseded his abilities as a boxer, Ruben Hurricane Carter, passed away. He is a person, an individual who became the focal point of a lot of social causes. You know, there are boxers, you sort of associate boxers in a lot of ways as ultimately being destined to have some sort of tragic end. It just appears to be the nature of the business. But few have lived a life, and few went through as much as Reuben Hurricane Carter, who passed away in the weekend. Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet columnist and co-host of Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan, is going to join us to talk about Reuben Hurricane Carter, what he meant to boxing, and what he meant in the much larger picture. Stephen Brunt will join us in a few minutes when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The story of the hurricane, the man the authorities came to blame for something that he never done.
Put in a prison. Reuben Hurricane Carter passed away this weekend, and I described them before the break. Yeah, cult figures, probably the wrong phrase to describe the guy. Wrongly convicted. So many societal elements wrapped up in the story of Hurricane Carter that it really does him a disservice to describe him as a cult figure. But I guess what I would say is, because his cause was adopted by so many high-profile individuals, people like Bob Dylan and Joan Baez, because his cause was adopted by them, by the literati, by people in the music business, he and his story became a part of social discussion as much as sports discussions. Stephen Brunt of Sportsnet, columnist at Sportsnet, co-host of Primetime Sports, and I dare say the best writer on boxing in Canada, and certainly one of the best in North America, joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Stephen, I was struggling to try to figure out how to describe Reuben Carter to people, how to describe the story. He's not the first athlete to be wrongly arrested and run afoul of the law and have racism be part of the story. But boy, he resonated more than a lot of people. And is that part of that, do you think, just because we view boxers in some ways as sort of destined to be inherently tragic?
Well, there's a lot of elements in Reuben's story. There's a lot of twists and turns in the story. But if you want to go back to 1966 in Paterson, New Jersey, Reuben Carter and John Artis were, arrested for a crime they didn't commit, were twice convicted of a crime they didn't get, a horrific crime. You know, three guys shot dead in a bar in Paterson. If anybody wants to read about the trials, it's all out there, starting with Reuben's own book, The 16th Round, which is I would recommend to anybody, his first book.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a classic story of justice not done. Reuben had warts. He had warts then. He'd been to jail before. He was a rough guy. He was
You know, he was not Simon Pure.
Mm-hmm.
But if you, you know, again, look at the circumstances and look at how he was railroaded, he and John Artis were railroaded. John Artis, a guy who was 19 years old who, you know, he barely knew him, just ended up sharing a ride that night. It was a terrible miscarriage of justice, and the cause was, you know, was a just one. You know, let's, as people came to understand it, let's get this guy out of jail. He shouldn't be there. He had three consecutive life terms he was serving.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, the Reuben Carter, who came through so vividly in the 16th round, people understood that he was a angry, very intelligent, you know, interesting guy, you know, who had been done wrong. You know, it was a very compelling story. And then, of course, you know, there are all the later things about how he wound up in Canada.
Yeah, what was it about his case, Stephen, that, you know, I know he attracted a lot of support from sort of, I'm going to call them liberal shattering classes. But you know what I mean. I mean, sure. From the literati and people, his story seemed to resonate with them. But it was especially this group, this Canadian group. How did that come about? What was their relationship with him?
Well, you know, the reason he resonated is, you know, and this, again, historically, this has happened over and over again, was because he was articulate enough to tell his own story.
Mm.
You know, that he was a guy who was in this terrible situation, but he could also express what had happened to him. You know, people, the book was what drew people to him. Lord knows how many people there were who were in the same situation or similar situations to Reuben Carter who were rotting away in jails. But, you know, he had the ability to eloquently and artistically tell his story, and that's what drew people to him. There's no question about that. The Canadian story is almost worthy of another book, and it is a complicated one, and there are a lot of gray areas in it, and there's a lot of contradictory stuff. I'm not sure I can do it justice in this, but, you know, the short version is there were this group of people, you know, many of whom are still around, who lived kind of communally, although they were kind of a free enterprise commune. You know, they were kind of a business-driven commune. They had brought a kid back from Brooklyn, a poor kid from Brooklyn named Lesra Martin, who came to live with them in their place in Toronto. You know, he was functionally illiterate. They taught him to read. And, you know, one of the things he read and that he was moved by was the 16th round, you know, and that's how they found out about the book. That's how they found out about Reuben. There were lawyers, you know, who were working for years on Reuben Carter's cause in the United States, you know, working for free, trying to get him out, trying to explore every legal avenue. But the Canadians did jump in, and they did help with research. They, you know, became very, they connected with him directly. They, you know, brought him things in prison. They cared about him. And when Reuben was finally freed, you know, he wanted to get the heck out of the United States. And they provided a home for him. And he eventually actually married the woman who was the dominant personality in that commune. So, which, you know, there's a book called Lesra and the Hurricane. That's their version of this. And that's the version of the story that became the Norman Jewison feature film.
Stephen Brunt joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. What type of a fighter was Hurricane Carter?
He was good. He was a very good fighter. He was not I don't think he was great. You know, again, one of the things that the film kind of, you know, made people think was that he was a guy who had been unfairly screwed out of a chance to win a title. You know, a bad decision, that he lost a bad decision in a title fight based on race. That's not true. You know, he was, you know, if you think of that kind of era, though, of the Friday night fights, he was one of those guys, and he was very good. But by the time, you know, and again, it's got nothing to do with what happened to him, but by the time he was arrested for the Lafayette Bar and Grill murders, his career was really in decline. You know, he was really, you know, he was losing almost as much as he was winning, and he was kind of at the end of the road as a boxer.
The nickname Hurricane, where did that come from? Was that just related to his style of fighting? Or?
Yeah, through a lot of punches, you know, through, you know, volume punches. There was another fighter in those days named Tommy Hurricane Jackson, you know, who was a heavyweight who was famous for throwing a million punches, and it was sort of the same thing that, you know, Reuben wasn't the biggest puncher in the world, but he made up for it in volume. He was, you know, he was kind of an all-action guy in the ring.
Did you have many chances to talk to him?
Yeah, lots. Yeah.
What was he like to talk to, Stephen?
He's a charismatic guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the first thing. He had a he had kind of one of those. He had a magnificent smile. He could, you know, he was very eloquent. He spoke. He had that kind of preacher cadence when he spoke. He was a great public speaker. You know, he was. Yeah, he lit up a room when you met him. And sometimes that personality, you know, there were a lot of twists and turns in his story. And it's not, you know, and I'm not talking about what happened to him in the States,
right.
But his story after that. You know, there's some good and there's some bad in there, and you know, there's a lot of shades of gray, but you know, Ruben's personality was something that could carry him through. He was, you know, he could work a room, he could light up a room, he could captivate a large audience.
It's remarkable because he was a pretty, when he was a young child, he as I remember reading, had a pretty pronounced stutter, didn't he?
He did. Yeah, you're right about that. And he managed to overcome that. Whatever else you want to say about Rube, he had no shot, you know, early in his life. He's one of those guys who should never, who never really had a chance.
Right, dead end kid
in absolutely every way. And but you know, he did have the heart of the lion, in terms of a sense of, you know, of his own cause, especially, and then he took on some other people's causes later on, you know, who were in similar state that were in similar straits to what he had been.
Stephen, it was good of you to join us this morning. Thanks so much again. Ruben Carter passed away Sunday of prostate cancer at the age of 76. And I'm sure you and Bobcat will touch on this.
I'm not in with the Bobcat tonight, but I'm writing something, so they'll
perfect.
Be coming up on sportsnet.ca very soon.
Awesome. I look forward to it, Steve. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jeff.
Take care. That is Stephen Brunt again. There you go. Stephen Brunt will have an article on Ruben Hurricane Carter up on the Sportsnet website. Needless to say, you're going to read it. Ruben Hurricane Carter spent 19 years in jail for a triple murder he did not commit. Passed away in Toronto this weekend at the age of 76. Ruben Carter moving up to Canada from New Jersey after that conviction was overturned. We appreciate Stephen Brunt joining us. Well, I told you that we would have a qualifier from our show for Raptors tickets for tomorrow night's game against the Brooklyn Nets. Kevin Pereira, at Kevin Pereira 82, is our winner. He used the hashtag Blair Show Raps, said would love to rip on officials tomorrow night. I have 25 plus years in experience at ripping on soccer officials. Thanks, Kevin Pereira. You have qualified for tickets to tomorrow night's Raptors-Nets game. And I will ask you, I will take you up in your offer to be all over the officials if you go to that game. And Kevin, congratulations. And thank you to all of those who took part in an attempt to qualify to get Raptors tickets. That's it for the Blair Show. Baseball Central's next with Kevin Barker. Your Toronto Blue Jays. A 5-4 road trip could have been an awful lot more. Could have been 7-2, folks, very easily. No, I will say this, should have been 7-2. The Blue Jays were 5-4 in that road trip. They have today off. 3 against Baltimore. Then Boston comes in. Got that to talk about. Got a bizarre brawl between the Pirates and Milwaukee Brewers. We want to talk to Kevin Barker about that. The New York Yankees, another pitching injury in the American League East. Ivan Nova out for the rest of the regular season, expected to undergo Tommy John surgery. Clearly that has an impact on this division and by extension an impact on the Blue Jays. So it's Baseball Central next with Kevin Barker. Stay tuned, everybody.